to smile. They call me names. I'm about to knock that smirky little grin right off your face. I could kick your ass. I could take your jaw. Put your bat in the dirt, boy. Yeah, I'd have a ball.
Yourself a good rap deal, spit with the best, just don't get your cap here. But I'm from the Wild West with real women and fast steel. It's in my veins, I'ma stick to my guns. Man, I live this all day, lyrics hot as the sun. Go and play your music, but it ain't gonna work though. Nobody wants to hear about them woods and them dirt roads.
Some of them dirt roads wind down the mountain and roll out over the plain. Let me tell you, cowgirl, you ain't seen nothing till you seen the Montana rain. Big shots, way back, 30-06 on a gun rack. Yeah, standing knee deep in a trash stream. Lord have mercy, that ain't country. Lord have mercy, that ain't country.
Yeah, we country. Just what God gave us, you can try to come and test us, but we're battling like you.
Some of them dirt roads wind down the mountain and roll out over the plains. Let me tell you, cowgirl, you ain't seen nothing till you've seen the Montana rain. Big shots, they play, 30-06 on the gun rack, honey. Standing knee deep in a trout stream. Lord have mercy, that ain't country.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I ain't kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day, and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep guitar.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio. Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. Howdy then, and welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 25th of April. It's Monday. I hope you guys had a great weekend. This was the first weekend here, the first Monday. We're about to try our new schedule. Amy and I are both have worked up a different way that we want to do things, so I hope it meets with your approval. A couple things to mention here right quick. We've got... I'm going to do these kind of in reverse order here. There's a possibility that we may have to do some changing around a little bit with our class in Washington. Don't panic. It's not anything major. So I'll let you know. It'll probably be probably Tuesday, tomorrow, or Wednesday. I'll let you know for sure. But we do have a three-day personal defense handgun class coming up that weekend, and that will be the weekend following the LFA Arms Expo in Yakima, Washington. I would strongly urge you to make that if you possibly can. It's going to be a heck of a lot of fun, a lot of stuff, a lot of good folks, good speakers. There'll be a lot of vendors there, and it'll just be a lot of fun. And in May, hang on a minute, let me look. We've got several things going on in May here. And I'm not even sure that all of them, let's see. We've got some private training going on up on the Arizona Strip in the end of May. And we may squeeze in another class there in the middle. We're not sure about that yet. Possibly Tucson. And then in, let's see, the 6th and 7th of May will be... what is the 6th and 7th? Our designated rifleman class. And that'll be right here in the Sholo area. We'll tell you where that is as you sign up for that. So that's what we got going right this minute. We had a advanced concealed weapons class this Saturday, day before yesterday. And let's see. Look at my calendar here. All right, I think that's all we got going on right now. But we do have some other things in the work. This is going to be an exciting next couple of months here. We've just got a lot going on, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I've got a deal here I want to play for you, and it's an interesting deal, and it has to do with Oregon and what went on up there. And it is I got it from a website. I was doing some research here on different aspects of this, and I found one that Guy is LDS, and the thing is entitled One Mormon's Opinion About the Oregon Shooting, I think, or something like that. And it's a pretty interesting take on it. I think you'll enjoy it. And after that, I need to talk about, we've got a whole new subject we want to talk about a little bit, some new developments that have come up over the weekend. And I've got to... got some ideas for you here that may help you out a little bit. Some of you may have already come to this conclusion, but it kind of goes along with what we've talked about before as far as, you know, go bags and 72-hour kits and all that kind of stuff. But it's a little different take on that, so we're going to spend a few minutes on that after we play this little deal here. So give me just a second here, and I'll get this fired up for you. Stay tuned.
I support Ammon Bundy and the other members of the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom group who have occupied a federally owned facility in Oregon. However, I'm also a stalwart member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the LDS. As had been expected, the church has released to media inquiries about the situation in Oregon a strongly worded press release. And in the statement, the LDS Church said, quote, "While the disagreement occurring in Oregon about the use of federal lands is not a church matter, church leaders strongly condemn the armed seizure of the facility and are deeply troubled by the reports that those who have seized the facility suggest that they are doing so on scriptural principles. This armed occupation can in no way be justified on a scriptural basis. We are privileged to live in a nation where conflicts with government or private groups can and should be settled using peaceful means according to the laws of the land," end quote. The reason that the church has had to weigh in on the matter is because the leader of Citizens for Constitutional Freedom, which I'll refer to as CCF, as well as many other members of the group, are active members of the LDS Church, and they're members in good standing. "I sustain the principles and the sentiments of the church leaders as expressed in the statement, though I do feel that the premise upon which the statement is based may be incorrect. What I believe to be the oversight in the statement, specifically, is the suggestion that we live in a nation where all citizen conflicts with government can be resolved by appealing directly to the government for a just redress of grievances. After spending many hours reading primary documents and conducting a very sincere and open-minded research into the matter, I firmly believe that the government's abuse of these citizens is so egregious that a convincing case can be made that the members of the CCF are acting in legitimate self-defense against an aggressive and abusive bureaucracy that is acting far outside the rule of law and trampling on their rights. There's far more to the story that is not addressed by the church's press release that deserves attention and that helps to explain why I sympathize with the group and why I believe that they are justified in their actions. I think that a large percentage of those people who consider the following facts with an open mind will experience a shift in their perception of the situation and will find themselves in solidarity with the ranchers and with the members of the occupation group. At the outset, I want it to be clear that while I have ideas and opinions that may seem to contradict the statement of the church, I am not in any way suggesting that I believe the church's principles on this matter are incorrect. I sustain the leadership of the church in spirit and in deed. Nevertheless, open dialogue and discussion of alternate perspectives is both the privilege and the duty of members of the LDS Church. The following ideas are my own. They may not reflect those of other Mormons, and certainly don't reflect those of the church itself. First, I need to give you a very condensed summary of the actions of the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, and the actions of the federal government in general that prompted the response of the citizens involved in the protest. In the next few minutes, some of this may seem dry, but please stick with me. The information here is crucial to understand the legitimacy of the claims of the ranchers who are protesting the actions of the government. The U.S. government has taken control of vast amounts of public land illegally. For example, it claims to own 62% of all the land in Idaho, 53% of all the land in Oregon, 65% of the land in Utah, 49% of the land in Wyoming. And the government claims that it owns a staggering 85% of the land in the state of Nevada. But the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1845 in the case of Pollard Lessie versus Hagen that once a territory became an official state, the federal government must surrender all claims to the land. The court used the example of Alabama's recent entrance into statehood and declared that, quote, the United States never held any municipal sovereignty, jurisdiction, or right of soil except for temporary purposes. The court further stated that, quote, the right of eminent domain, which has been temporarily held by the United States, passed to the state. So the right of eminent domain means the power of the federal government to take control of private property and devote it to public use. And the Supreme Court ruled that it is unconstitutional for the federal government to exert authoritative control over state lands. Yet that is exactly what the government has done, most notably out west. But the true outrage are the tyrannical methods by which the federal government has seized those lands. Let's take the case of Oregon. For generations, both white settlers and Native Americans controlled the lands of the West. But the federal BLM began forcing people to give up their lands through unjust lawsuits, through bogus environmental protection schemes, and outright criminal seizures. In Oregon, the BLM forced ranchers to give up vast tracts of their own private lands in Harney County, once the most prosperous county in the state, by the way, which bankrupted the ranchers, causing Harney County to plummet in ranking down to the worst county in the state and leaving the citizens in abject poverty. Among the few remaining holdouts in the county was the Hammond family, who refused to sell their lands to the government. In response to these people who were holding out, the BLM declared that grazing rights were harmful to wildlife, and so they revoked most of the grazing permits that were used to feed the cattle. They cut off access to water resources where herds had been drinking water for over 100 years, and they diverted the water to new locations that resulted in the flooding and the complete destruction of 31 homes and ranches. Financially ruined the property owners that were left, most of them relented, and they asked the government to purchase these now worthless lands, but the Hammond family still stood their ground and refused to sell. So the BLM took the land that it had just acquired from this flooding scheme, and they did get the land at deeply discounted prices because it was now worthless, and they declared that land to be a wildlife refuge. In time, the BLM and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the FWS, began suing the Hammonds in court to gain control of their land. The courts ruled in favor of the Hammonds, but undeterred, Fish and Wildlife began illegally building fences on the Hammonds' own property to stop their cattle from being able to access their own water sources. Knowing that the courts had already validated their claim to the rights to the water sources, the Hammonds tried to demand that the federal agents stop building the fences on their property. In response, the government accused the Hammonds of, quote, disturbing and interfering with federal contractors. So the Hammonds were arrested and taken to jail. When a federal judge saw the accusations against the Hammonds, he refused to put the case on the court docket, and the Hammonds went free. But these federal agencies continued to harass the Hammonds, building illegal fences, building barricades on roads that would allow them access to various parts of their own property. Each time the cases went before magistrates or other bodies, the Hammonds were vindicated. But the federal agents and federal agencies only escalated their abuse. Eventually, the federal government effectively cut the Hammonds' private property in half, using obscure measures to force the ranchers to construct new fences along their entire property, the boundaries of the entire property, which was huge. Because their financial resources had already been depleted from a decade of battling the federal government in court, the Hammonds could not afford the fencing project. And so they were forced to sell their cattle, which further devastated their livelihoods. And in the end, the Hammonds had to sell their home. They had to sell the entire ranch. Fortunately, they were able to sell it to another rancher rather than to the BLM. Now, some years passed, and the Hammonds were able to reobtain their ranch, and they began rebuilding their business. But in 2006, a massive lightning storm started multiple fires that joined together and formed this destructive wall of fire that destroyed thousands of acres. As the wildfire advanced across the Hammonds' property, they went out and they did what's called a backfire. They started a backfire to protect their home. Backfiring is a tactic used by firefighters to stop an oncoming fire by deliberately setting a fire in the path of the larger one that's coming towards you. By consuming the fuel in the path of the primary fire, the backfires deprive the larger fire of the tinder that it needs to keep burning. In the process of doing this, the Hammond's fire burnt the grass on 1 acre of the BLM's property. In fact, the BLM was forced to produce in court evidence that as a result of this, the value of that land, of that 1 acre, actually increased. But so for this great crime, the BLM agents filed a police report over the backfire and had the Hammonds arrested again. When the district attorney reviewed the accusations by the federal agents and considered the evidence, he dropped the charges against the Hammonds and refused to prosecute them. And for a little while, the case seemed to be over. 5 years later, 5 years after the incident in 2011, the U.S. Attorney's Office filed formal terrorism charges against the Hammonds for their backfire. Once again, the Hammonds were arrested. And under the Federal Anti-Terrorism Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, the backfire crime carried a minimum sentence of 5 years in prison. So, to further savage the character of the Hammond family, these federal goons sent the Hammonds mugshots to all the news and media outlets and portrayed them as terrorist arsonists, which was completely untrue. They conducted a federal raid of the Hammonds' home and property to look for evidence to use against them, and the search didn't produce anything. Not only that, but the BLM was found to have used government computers in Denver, Colorado, to post fictitious quotes from officials suggesting that the Hammonds' terrible acts had endangered firefighters and had put into jeopardy the homes of other people in the area. But then it came out that the statements were complete government fabrications, and so the statements were removed. So the federal trial of the Hammonds continued. It was so outrageously corrupt, so disgusting and unjust that I won't even address it here. It would take far too much time to chronicle. But I can assure you, the court proceedings were just as bad, just as unjust, as these other federal actions taken against the Hammonds. The only redeeming aspect of this farcical trial was that Judge Michael Hogan chose to overrule the minimum terrorist sentence. He ruled that the sentencing guidelines in this particular case were a violation of the Constitution's Eighth Amendment regarding cruel and unusual punishment. Instead, he ordered the Hammond men, Dwight and Stephen, to pay $400,000 to the BLM and to serve prison sentences, 3 months for the 70-year-old Dwight and 12 months for the 42-year-old Stephen. Eventually, Dwight was released from prison in March 2013, and Stephen got out in January of 2014. But just 3 months after Stephen had completed his year-long prison sentence for a bogus crime, the BLM took the Hammonds back to court, demanding that they both be forced to serve 5 full years in prison. During the court case, the Hammonds were forced to grant the BLM the right of first refusal, meaning that they were legally bound to offer their property to the federal government should they have to sell it due to financial difficulties, which was a scenario all but guaranteed by sending the men back to prison. As of January 5, 2015, Dwight and Stephen were once again behind bars. For the crime of protecting their home from raging wildfires, the Hammonds have been declared to be domestic terrorists, and in the case of 74-year-old Dwight, his term is basically a death sentence. The future for the Hammond women, for the Hammond children, is especially bleak. While the family has been able to pay $200,000 out of the $400,000 fine, the remaining $200,000 was due by the end of 2015. Without the men to run the ranch and earn an income, it's basically assured at this point that the Hammond family is going to be forced to finally turn over their property to the federal government. This is how the United States of America works. The story of the Hammond family is not unique by any means. The government has employed the same dirty tactics over and over against countless farmers and ranchers across the West. Every bit of it is unconstitutional. Our noble founding fathers revolted against their government for far less abuse than that which our present government is meting out against today's citizens. Consider what Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and as Jefferson originally worded it, property, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. All experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security." Not only has the government committed the abuses mentioned previously, but video evidence has surfaced of federal agents purposefully setting fires to the private lands of some of the Oregon ranchers who held out against the BLM. If you watch nothing else, please watch the YouTube video of federal goons setting hundreds of fires around the perimeter of those ranchers' homes, around their lands, within 100 feet of their cattle corrals. The fires destroyed the land resources that their herds needed to survive. The fires killed scores of cattle. Cattle that were valued at thousands of dollars a head. The fires burned down some of the homes of the ranchers. Frankly, the ranchers are lucky that nobody died in the infernos set by the government. The video evidence is irrefutable. The government of the United States is committing wanton acts of terrorism against American citizens. You can watch it for yourself. YouTube.com/watch?V=KHYZQRMZ71A. I'll put the link in the video description to make it easier for you. Watch it. If burning down the homes of American citizens who refuse to give their private property to the government doesn't give people justification to take a stand against the tyranny of an out-of-control, despotic federal government, then we may as well just spit on the graves of our founding fathers and revise our textbooks to refer to them as terrorists for fighting back against the abuses of King George III and the British Parliament. This is why I disagree with the position taken in the church's press release. Of course, under a rose-colored view of America, politicians tell the truth. The government obeys the U.S. Constitution, and citizens enjoy a system that protects their rights. In such a scenario, I would agree with the position that, quote, we are privileged to live in a nation where conflicts with government can be settled using peaceful means according to the laws of the land. But the fact is that we no longer live in a nation where conflicts such as these can be settled according to the laws of the land when the criminal involved is the government itself. The federal government does not obey the law. In fact, the way that the BLM works outside of congressional oversight, the law is whatever it says it is at any given time. If the federal government can take up to 85% of the land away from the people in a given state without constitutional authorization, and to do so by illegally harassing, suing, burning down the homes, businesses, and properties of those who dare to oppose them, if the federal government can label innocent American citizens as terrorists and strip them of their God-given rights in the process, then it becomes the duty of the people, according to our founders, to revolt, which is exactly what the men who have converged on Oregon are doing. They are patriots. I also take issue with the suggestion in this press release that armed resistance to the government, quote, can in no way be justified on a scriptural basis. One need only turn to the Book of Alma in the Book of Mormon and read stories about Captain Moroni threatening to march on the headquarters of the Nephite government and depose the leaders to know that Mormon scripture does in fact provide instances in which armed resistance to government tyranny may be necessary. We could go through the various books of scripture and demonstrate many more examples. Furthermore, the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is brim with examples of the leaders of the church taking up arms to resist local, state, and federal governments. After a series of egregious abuses against the Mormon people and the utter exhaustion of all legal efforts to obtain a redress of grievances through the courts, Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon Church, took several actions that would today likely draw a stiff rebuke from the church's public relations department. For instance, in March 1844, following a dispute with a federal bureaucrat, Joseph Smith organized the Secret Council of 50. This council granted the authority, was granted authority to decide which state and national laws that Mormons should obey. So even back then, it was understood that sometimes the government passes laws that violate the U.S. Constitution, and Joseph Smith did not believe in obeying unconstitutional laws. We could talk about Joseph Smith's marshaling of hundreds of armed men called Zion's Camp, who traveled thousands of miles to potentially fight for the rights of oppressed Mormons whose homes were being burned down in Missouri. Or we could talk about how Joseph Smith activated the Nauvoo Legion, a Mormon militia that had participated in many gun battles with their enemies. The actions of the Mormon militia contributed to the decision by the governor of Illinois to issue the infamous extermination order against the Mormons, in which he ordered the people of the state to either kill or drive out the Mormons from the state. In fact, just days before his murder, General Joseph Smith stood before his gun-wielding militia and asked them, "Are you willing to die for me?" And after the militia shouted a response in the affirmative, General Smith drew his sword and cried out, "I will die for you. If this people cannot have their rights, my blood shall run upon the ground like water." Joseph Smith was no pacifist who refused to do his duty to protect the freedoms of his countrymen in the way that the founding fathers intended. Let's not forget that years earlier, Joseph Smith had spent 6 months in the Liberty Jail dungeon in Missouri. How did he get out? Was he let out? No. He didn't leave the jail with the permission of the government. He escaped, and he went into hiding to avoid being recaptured. That's hardly an example of blanket submission to government authority. Of course, we know that Joseph Smith was held without trial and without having been found guilty of any crime. His incarceration was completely against the Constitution. He knew that because the government's actions were unjustified, he was under no obligation to obey them, and so he escaped. Had Joseph Smith decided to act according to the counsel of today's church press release, he might not have ever made it out of Liberty Jail because he would have submitted himself to the authority usurped by the government. The question then is raised, are Mormons under obligation to obey the laws of the land when those laws are unconstitutional? Fortunately, according to LDS scripture, Jesus Christ himself has answered that question in Doctrine and Covenants, section 98, verses 5 through 7, quote, "And now verily I say unto you concerning the laws of the land, it is my will that my people should observe to do all things whatsoever I command them, and that the law of the land, which is constitutional, supporting that principle of freedom in maintaining rights and privileges, belongs to all mankind and is justifiable before me. Therefore, I, the Lord, justify you and your brethren of my church in befriending that law which is the constitutional law of the land. And as pertaining to the law of man, whatsoever is more or less than this cometh of evil." Joseph Smith himself elaborated on this same principle. Quote, "I am the greatest advocate of the Constitution of the United States there is on earth. Yet it does not provide the manner by which that freedom can be preserved, nor for the punishment of government officers who refuse to protect the communities, who interfere with the rights of the people. Its sentiments are good, but it provides no means of enforcing them. The Constitution should contain a provision that every officer of the government who should neglect or refuse to extend the protection guaranteed in the Constitution should be subject to capital punishment. And then the President of the United States would not say to us, 'Your cause is just, but I can do nothing for you.'" The prophet was not ambiguous in either his speech or his actions when it came to the issue of injustice. His personal example in situations very similar to those being experienced by both Mormons and non-Mormons in the West today contradicts the notion that conflicts with the government and unjust laws can always be settled through peaceful means. Sometimes one has no choice but to draw a line in the sand and take a stand against Satan's efforts to rob men of their God-given freedom. I'll conclude with a final thought on how Ammon Bundy and the other Citizens for Constitutional Freedom are being savaged in the media. I really take exception to the way they are being depicted. Out of scores of similar examples, Fox News gave this report, quote, "The armed protesters who triggered a standoff when they stormed a wildlife refuge in Oregon listed their demands at a news conference Monday." This is complete hyperbole. The protesters didn't trigger a standoff by storming into a federal compound. They arrived at a small, uninhabited log building, a visitor center, out in the middle of nowhere, hours from any real civilization. They arrived there not by storming in, but by doing what they do when they go anywhere else. They drove to the location in their work trucks and their family sedans. They got out of their vehicles, looked around, stood in the snow with nothing else to do, and just chatted with each other. There was no vandalism. There was no shooting of guns, no rioting. That was it. It was not some kind of dramatic or hostile takeover. Nor did their rifles play any role whatsoever in them taking over the compound. guns were not used to gain control over the facility. So why did they have guns? If you'll look back at the video evidence, the last time these same people, Ammon Bundy and those with him, the last time they staged a peaceful protest of government corruption, back during the Clive and Bundy ranch problem in 2014, none of them had their guns with them. They had no weapons at all. Because of that, in the video, you see the federal goons swooping in and attacking these protesters because they were defenseless. Some of the protesters were run over by BLM vehicles. BLM agents brought in attack dogs that bit some of the protesters. One man who had done absolutely nothing wrong was tased 3 times in a row. A pregnant woman was assaulted. A grandmother was thrown violently to the ground. You can watch the event yourself. Again, I will put the link to that video in the description. You'll notice that because the protesters were not armed, the federal agents felt as though they could act with impunity. They could use violence. They could physically abuse the protesters even though they had done absolutely nothing wrong. The reason that these peaceful citizens who are now in Oregon have taken guns with them into this new protest is simply for personal protection. They are not using them for aggression. The media is hyping the story and blatantly mischaracterizing the intent and disposition of these citizens. Joseph Smith carried guns with him when the situation warranted it. Remember when he was attacked by an angry mob in the Carthage jail, again being held without charge? Joseph Smith had with him an illegal pistol, and he used it after his brother had been shot dead in the face. Joseph Smith stuck the pistol out of the door, shot down the stairway, and unconfirmed reports were that he killed 2 of the attackers out of the mob of nearly 500 people that attacked the jail. He killed 2 of the attackers in self-defense before he himself was gunned down. Often, people that say they're pro-Second Amendment say that the efforts to curtail gun rights are absurd, because the only people who are going to obey gun laws are the people who are already law-abiding citizens. Criminals don't respect the law, so therefore it is wrong to impose additional restrictions on innocent Americans who want the ability to defend themselves. The situation in Oregon is no different. It's already an established fact that these BLM agents have shown no respect for the rule of law or for the rights or safety of the people when they peaceably assemble to protest, which is a First Amendment right. There are several videos that prove that BLM agents routinely assault citizens during what should be peaceful protests. So just as we don't blame citizens for keeping guns with them to protect against civilian criminals, why would we blame the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom, who have been beaten up and abused by federal agents, for bringing their guns with them to protect themselves from government criminals in this situation? If you need a reminder of what armed squads of federal agents do to innocent citizens, watch my videos on Ruby Ridge, on the Waco Massacre, or on the Clive and Bundy standoff. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this article in full. Again, please don't misconstrue my opinions on this subject as a rejection of the Council of the LDS Church leadership on the subject. I sustain the church leaders and encourage all members of the church to do the same. I believe that disagreement over such matters becomes unhealthy and detrimental to one's own spiritual nature when one declares opposition, open defiance to the guidance of the leaders of the church. We must rally around our modern prophet, support him with our words, with our actions, despite differences that we may have or opinions that vary on issues such as these. Thank you again. This has been Jake Morfonios.
Well, I ain't afraid of dying. It's the thought of being dead. I wanna go on being me once my eulogy's been read. Don't spread my ashes out to sea. Don't lay me down to rest. You You can put my mind at ease if you fill my last request.
Pop me up beside the jukebox if I die. Lord, I wanna go to heaven, but I don't wanna go tonight. Fill
Alright, had to throw a little song in there too. I had to run out and take a break real quick. That was kind of an interesting take, and I agree with it, for the most part. I think it was a neat deal. Hey, there's been a turn of events that have happened here over the last couple of days that has made me rethink something here. And, you know, we've all got our bug out bags you know, the quick bag, you know, what we used to call the recon bag and stuff like that. And I'm pretty well set up for all that stuff, but I've been thinking, because of this turn of events that have involved some other people here, there's probably a few items you ought to put in that I haven't really thought about. And some of you may be way ahead of me. You might already be thinking about this. But with the Patriots being rounded up and so many things going on. Let's don't even think about that. Let's think about a tornado, earthquake, hurricane, fire, any number, terrorist attack, any number of things that may have pushed you out of your home unexpectedly, or you may have been somewhere else and you maybe you rode to the ball game with somebody, or to a rally, you know, a couple hours away, and maybe you didn't take your stuff with you. Something where you just don't have the option of grabbing your bag there. Well, something that might be good to put in your bag would be a what they call a burner cell phone. Now, the burner cell phone you'd only worry about so much if you were worried about being tracked or something like that. If you're not worried about that, then a thing to put in there would be maybe your last smartphone. You may have a couple of them laying around. Those smartphones are still modems. You can still hook up to Wi-Fi on those. Whether they're turned on or not makes no difference. If you've got battery power, they're still computers. So you can still get on your web-based emails. You can still get on your, you know, Skype to make phone calls. Or, you know, there's quite a few different, Facebook as far as that goes. There's quite a few different things that you can access with that modem, with that old smartphone. So put that in there. And a wall charger, they're cheap as can be. Matter of fact, and my thought on this was to get a fast charger, at least for the Android, for most of them, instead of just your standard wall charger, get a fast charger. They charge in about half the time, and this would be important because if you had to, sneak up to the school or to a church or somebody's house and plug into an outdoor socket long enough to get some charge on your phone or something like that. You know, the faster it goes, obviously, the more you're going to get. So that's not a bad thing. I would also put in a car charger. Maybe you could go up to, somebody's boat, camper, car's unlocked. Maybe your buddies that you were traveling with. Throw in you those little, and all you need is the little cheapo little charger that you get at, anywhere, you know, off the counter at Circle K or something. I don't know if I'd go that cheap. Get a decent one. And you've already got a cord with your USB cord with your fast charger, so you don't need another one of those. I would put those two things in there, and I would also put in, and you can get these down at Walmart for about $10. I got Amy one, and I've got two of them. I've got a same size Amy's got, and then I've got another bigger one. And that's a little... what would you call them? They're chargers. They're little batteries. The medium size one's about 3/4 inch square, and about 4 inches long, 3.5-4 inches long. And you turn your USB cable around and plug it in one way, and plug that into your fast charger or your slow charger or your car or your computer or whatever you got, and charge that thing up. And then turn it off, put it in your bag along with the cord. And then when you need it, you can keep your phone on airplane mode or something to keep battery usage down, or turn it off completely depending on how long it takes to reboot it, you know, to get it back up. So it might be better to put it on airplane mode and cut down on the amount of power that it's using. I guess it wouldn't matter a whole lot because you're only using it for a modem anyway. But the thing is, if you go by, any number of places that in town that have Wi-Fi, maybe places that you've been before. And sometimes there's places like, I'll just say Jiffy Lube here. And I believe that their password is the same around the country. So if you can get up, you know, right up next to a Jiffy Lube, and I'm just using Jiffy Lube for an example here, you can get on Wi-Fi. You might be able to get on Wi-Fi up by next to somebody's house. Some of these offices and buildings, just go along there until you find one that's not secured, that doesn't require a password. The number of ways that you can get on there. So that was one of the things that I thought of. And then one thing we have done, but I did it for a different reason, and now I'm thinking I'm going to put more in there, and that's money. I've always put $25 or something in there for $20, whatever it was. for, you know, pay phones, a little bit of gas, a little bribe, a little help for a ride somewhere or something like that. Or maybe just a snack, you know, because I'm out somewhere and I just need a bite to eat or a bottle of water or something. So having a little bit of money, but I'm thinking now that it'd probably be better to put $50 to $100 in there, because you may be out for a little while. You may need a motel room or something. So, you know, putting $100 or maybe more in there may not be an entirely bad idea. And I think that your pack should be kept fairly benign looking, you know, just not a camouflage camelback or something, but something a little something to draw attention. Or either do like some folks do and take that bag, your camouflage camelback, and put it in a gym bag of some kind, so that it's unobtrusive. Is that the word I'm looking for? Something that doesn't draw attention so much. And then on top of that, and then in regular things, you're going to need a handgun, ammo. You may or may not include a rifle with this particular bag, because what I'm fixing to say here in a minute would probably negate the fact of you losing a rifle, except with close friends. But, a little bit of food, some survival tabs maybe, a space blanket, you know, just minor stuff, water, of course. And some granola bars or something like that, a way to start a fire, flashlight, extra batteries, and you can use that phone when you're around Wi-Fi. You can use the GPS, you know, the maps and stuff like that on there. So it could be very useful for you. Now, if you're afraid you're going to be tracked on that phone, then maybe you don't want to do that. You might want to get a burner phone from Walmart, a track phone or something. But the next thing that I would do, and this is going to be a little over the top for some of you, but if this is important enough to you, especially if you're, if you're really, I'm not going to say really serious, because a lot of you are really serious, but a lot of you may not be able to afford to do this. But then I would say to make a clone of that bag, the identical bag, and put it in a storage room, a locker at the airport, a friend's house, somebody's garage somewhere or something, hide it, whatever. Put it in a tube and bury it somewhere closer to town or something. Somewhere, so if you just have to, if you're out and about and can't get to your regular bag or didn't bring it with you, then you'll have one. You'll have an additional one. Or you'll have one for a family member or friend. And I know that's a little over the top. I've asked you guys over the years to spend a hell of a lot of money and a lot of stuff on equipment and things. But I think that things are happening now to a point where I think that some of our preparations may come to fruition here before long. And, you know, how can you be too prepared? Answer me that. What can you do to become too prepared? I've done too much. I've just got too much extra gear. I've got too much food and water put back. I've got too many radios. With another radio is another thing you should put in both those bags. And your radios, of course, we've talked about that quite a bit. They're cheap. The Bofang UV5Rs, cheap, effective, rugged, work very well. You can put all the accessories and everything you need in there for $40. Radio by itself with a standard antenna and a little headset, you're talking about $25. $25, $30. You can gear that thing up with good accessories and stuff for... of course, some of the accessories you don't want to put in a go bag like that. You probably don't need a magnetic antenna, but you probably would want to put that 14.5-inch whip antenna in there. You might want to put a throat mic so that you can run this thing basically hands-free and quietly. So, you know, $50, you can get everything you need to run to have that radio one run really well. Extra battery or an extended battery to go with it. The UV-82s have a marvelous extended battery that I am so jacked about, and hadn't been out very long. And so that's kind of what's been on my mind here last day or so. Some things that happened over the weekend. So something for you to think about. And I know we've all got extra cell phones laying around, smartphones and stuff that we can use that you can't sell. You don't want to, I guess you can sell them in some places, but you don't want to throw them away. You still got chargers for them. You got all this stuff and they're just laying around in a drawer somewhere. So that would be a good thing to hold on to. So that being said, I think I'm going to ease on towards the door here. And I will be back with you. Amy and I both will be back live and in living color tomorrow night, Tuesday. And we'll see you then. And I sure do appreciate you joining me tonight.
Turn out the lights. The party's over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night. The party's over. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again. What a crazy, crazy party. Never seen so many people laughing, dancing.
All right, folks, this wraps up another Friday in Liberty Lounge, the fastest 2 hours on Internet radio. Join me again next week, Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern, for the Shooting Bench. And then again Friday at the same time for Liberty Lounge.
Cause for me, the party's over. Turn out the lights. The party's over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night. The party's over. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again. Once I.
You can also listen to Miss Amy at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday on Living Way Out Here. Have a great weekend and good night.
For me was just one party and then another. I broke her heart so many times. Had to have my party wine. Then one day she said, sweetheart, the party's over. Turn out the lights. The party's over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night. The party's over. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again.